By the time China's enormous Three Gorges Dam is finished, millions of people will be displaced, the landscape and a way of life changed forever. In a new documentary, Canadian filmmaker Yung Chang rides a luxury cruise liner up the Yangtze River to show us what's being lost and what's being gained. He tells the story of two teenagers, a spoiled boy from a middle-class family and a timid teenage girl whose family lives in a riverside shanty. Like many peasants, they will be forced to move. Both teenagers go to work on the cruise ship that caters to Western tourists, mostly Americans. Well, if you've been on that cruise or if you've visited the Yangtze River, call and tell us your story. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also share your experiences on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Yung Chang's film is called Up the Yangtze. It's being shown as part of the Silver Docs Festival of Documentaries at AFI's Silver Theater in Silver Spring, Maryland. And he's with us here in the night studio at the museum. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me here. This is great.
And the film is basically about your second trip up the Yangtze.
Actually, it is about many journeys on the Yangtze River that I took consequently to the first initial trip that I went on as a tourist.
And who was that with?
That was with my grandfather and my parents. And I'll never forget the experience because they invited me on invitation to take this sort of journey on the Yangtze River. And I knew that it would be a sort of surreal experience, a luxury cruise ship on this tragic river that's going to be flooded by the Three Gorges Dam.
Tragic not just because it's going to be flooded, but tragic throughout China's history.
That's true. It's a very mythical, historic landmark and it's considered the lifeline of China. In fact, you talk to anybody in China and people just call it the river, not even the Changjiang. It's actually in Chinese, it's known as the Long River.
And as we read today of the Mississippi overflowing its banks in so many places, the experience of the Yangtze and the Chinese people are certainly not different.
Not different at all. In fact, I look at it, rivers in a sense around the world are sort of like our arteries in our body. And it's an interesting analogy to think of it when you block that artery, what may happen. And the consequences.
And the consequences of the construction of the Three Gorges Dam is in many places the level of the river is going to rise 175 meters. Well, go that times three for feet and you realize
that's right.
Many cities and towns, millions of people are going to be displaced.
It's almost the equivalent of a 21-story building, and they say the weight of the water is going to be so heavy that scientists claim that it may tilt the Earth on its rotational axis by a slight degree.
I wonder, what was the reaction of your grandfather and your parents as they saw the beginnings of this process when you first took that trip?
Well, for my parents and for many of their generation and my grandfather's generation, it's a very nostalgic journey on the Yangtze River, and many, many people go there almost as a pilgrimage to see the historic landmarks, to see the countryside in that very important region. So for many people, it's really based... The cruise ship is secondary. That experience is secondary. The most important aspect is to be able to get to see all those important landmarks that they learned about as children.
And they also saw a China, completely outside their experience, a China in the midst of dynamic change.
That's right. And for my grandfather especially, it was a completely shocking experience, so much so that he can't even recognize the region and the China that he once grew up in. And now for him to consider going back to China, it's a very different experience. It's like walking through a door and walking into some sort of surreal, apocalyptic science fiction future.
We're talking with Yung Chang about his film, his documentary, Up the Yangtze. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Jackie's on the line calling from Arnsville in Oregon.
Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
We took our trip just in the midst of the year before the dam was open and when a lot of the villages had disappeared and they had relocated a lot of the people. But we were on a small boat cruise with about 30 people, and it was wonderful. It was we enjoyed the scenery, was wonderful. The gentleman that just called in, of course, it would be a shock to his father and us not ever having been there before. We thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sure that we were shown just what they wanted us to see, however. There was a lot of poverty in the villages, but the people were just as friendly as they could be. It was one of the most enjoyable trips we've taken.
I'm glad you had a great trip, Jackie. Were you allowed to talk to some of the locals?
Yes, yes. However, the guide was quite, he was with us a lot, you might say. I do remember passing several little military trucks, several, about 30 of them, full of little Chinese soldiers. And I said, "Tom, what's going on?" And he said, "They're learning to drive." So that kind of tells you that he was programmed.
There was a fascinating moment in your film when, in fact, they visit new housing for people who have been displaced and see how happy they're going to be. And, well, one of the tourists says, "Well, I'm sure they're not all happy." They said, no. Everybody is happy.
Everyone is happy, and that's been sort of a quotation around the office at our production office. But you know, I think that that's an interesting sort of dichotomy that I was able, as a filmmaker, to be able to kind of dig in and get two perspectives. And one of those is that sort of first layer. As a tourist and as a traveler anywhere in the world, when you go to visit a place, you're often given an example of something that is you know, at least the better side of that story. And
exactly.
And for me as a filmmaker, it was very special to be able to dig behind that and get the experience through Chinese eyes and show that.
Well, they did take us to a little class of kindergarten children at a school. They took us to a gentleman's house for tea, they tried to show us as much as they could without... I will have to say that they took us to... I think it was a tribute to Mao Zedong, and several of the Americans walked out, so, you know, unfortunately. But the Yangtze, I think, is gorgeous. In fact, we have a huge picture that we purchased on the boat signed by the artist of the Three Gorges on the Yangtze.
Mm-hmm.
We just thought it was spectacular.
Jackie, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. Bye.
One of the men, I want to ask you about the kids you focus on in the film in just a moment, but you talk to one man from one of the villages that is going to be drowned and who bursts into tears because he says the government won't be responsive to him. All the local officials are corrupt. The money never gets there. He's never been paid. And when they try to protest, they are beaten and dragged away.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly there are two sides to every story, and I should say that of course the Chinese government was very efficient in relocating 2 million plus people, but with that comes often controversy, and I think the question is how do you put a monetary value on your ancestral homeland, on your ancestral farmland, and it's met with a lot of protest, and so my experience as a filmmaker. As a witness, was that there were many people who were upset about this process and that they're not afraid to voice their opinions.
There's a question at the microphone here at the museum.
Yes, hello. This is Timothy from Berkeley. And I just returned from an extensive trip to China, actually, and I noticed that a lot of the cultural heritage is being sacrificed for economic growth. Like if you look at Beijing, for instance, lots of land is being cleared, the Hutongs, and also just the all area for the stadiums and such. And I wanted to know if you think there's any ways in which you can balance cultural preservation with economic growth.
Is there any way to balance cultural preservation with economic growth? Well, I think that it's an interesting sort of cultural question, I think, especially for Chinese culture. If you look at Chinese history and the way that Chinese looks at their culture, it's often not through sort of physical history. I mean, they don't often keep a building or some sort of structure. It's much more it's much different than that. It's often carried on through oral history or something like that. And so that's kind of how it works in China. There's a saying in Chinese, and it's nations come and go, kingdoms rise and fall. And I think it's sort of the idea that history is cyclical and it's always moving forward and never stepping back.
When you introduce us to these two teenagers, one is, we know her as Cindy, obviously not her Chinese name, but the name she's given when she goes to work on the cruise ship, because they all have to have English names to interact with the tourists, but very much from the old China, from a peasant family, very poor family. And then there is Jerry, obviously not his name either,
right.
But from, in a way, from the new China.
The little emperor.
Yeah. the spoiled product of a more middle class family,
mm-hmm.
and they have very different experiences when they get on the boat.
They do, and I think each of them has also different objectives. I mean, for Yushui or Cindy, from a very poor background, the opportunity to work on this boat was compared to her family's situation, it was a huge opportunity.
Step up, though she desperately wanted to go on to high school and college.
She had other desires, but I think the sort of filial obligation to her family is still existing in that unit, those Confucian values exist in her family, and she had to, because she was the eldest daughter, go to work on this boat. I think it's an interesting comparison. The father was making $200 a year, and Cindy was making the same amount in a month on that boat.
Mm. He says, send money home, but don't skimp on the food. Make sure you eat well.
That's right, that's right. And I think that's something interesting. I mean, in the film, some people have asked me, they've watched the movie, and they don't see a lot of sort of physical interaction in terms of hugging or showing that sort of compassion. And in fact, I would say that's quite different in a Chinese family. I think that for Asian families in general, I would say that love or that idea of compassion is shown through other ways. And you can see it in the father's face, his emaciated sort of face, and a very dignified man.
We're talking with Canadian filmmaker Yung Chang. His movie is called Up the Yangtze. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And it's interesting that the girl manages to make her way through this very alien world on this cruise ship with learning how to speak English and learning jobs with machines she's never experienced before.
That's right. And I mean, she didn't even have electricity or television at her home. So it was a completely different flip to be able to interact with this world.
And the boy, Jerry, is kicked off the ship after 3 months. He fails and says, you're too arrogant to work here.
It's almost this sort of moral tale as well. This, the ultimate downfall of this very cocky, arrogant kid is that he kind of latched on to the idea of how to make a quick buck and the idea of capitalism a little too quickly. And I think that is his ultimate demise.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Paul. Paul with us from California.
Yeah, this is Paul calling from Yosemite, California. About 10 years ago, my wife and I kayaked down the Three Gorges. And back then, a lot of the buildings in the towns and cities had 151 painted on the walls, mm-hmm. like 151 meters, which I assumed indicated the height the water would reach. I guess I'm wondering now, the current situation, has the water reached full height? And what happened to those cities? Were they demolished or just flooded in place? Are there half-flooded cities along the banks of the new lake?
Well, beginning in 1992, when the dam first broke ground, when the construction first broke ground, there was a very intense process of relocation. So many cities and buildings, I think there were 12 cities and I forget, 12 cities, 15 villages or something like that, were razed. They were broken down. The materials were broken down by hand, by sledgehammer, and in fact used as recycled materials to rebuild the new cities, either on higher land or across the river or in completely different regions altogether. The water level now is currently floating at around, I believe, between 150, 160 meters, and they're hoping to finish the complete flooding level by the end of, or I think the fall of 2009, it was the last that I heard. But it really does depend. The levels fluctuate based on natural flooding as well and the availability of, natural rainwater and such.
So, Paul, you got to see something that, people may never see again.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly why I think it was 96, and we brought a folding kayak, and I'll just say we didn't ask permission. but we paddled down, and all the places we visited, no one was being evacuated. They all knew it was coming, and I have a lot of pictures of kids playing in front of these big numbers on the walls. Hmm,
that's right. When I was shooting my film, I would walk by signs that said 170, 156 meters, and consequently, after the water had risen to that level, the signs were repainted with slogans that said "Support the Three Gorges Dam and such.
Yeah, Paul, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can get Valerie on the line. And Valerie is calling us from Indiana.
Yes, we're on the road from Georgia up to Wisconsin. In fact,
Hi.
We're visiting some people that we met on our China trip last October. we cruised down the Yangtze and wanted to do that before it was totally flooded. We were there at 156 meters. It was going to 175 meters. Mm-hmm. We were able to visit with some people who had been relocated, a woman whose family had been in a farm along the Yangtze for over 300 years, but she was given the opportunity to become a storekeeper in one of the new towns in mm-hmm. which she took. And now she is the matriarch. She's one of the epitomes of China success, I guess you'd say, in that town. And we were able to visit her in her home and to see her store and see how much change had come to her personally. She had mentioned that many people had been relocated, some when they chose something, they didn't want to choose to be a farmer somewhere else, or they didn't want to choose to be in the new towns, were relocated to Tibet, which we found interesting. We had just mm-hmm. been to Tibet, and they were relocating Tibet, and filling it with a lot of Chinese folks. But we too saw the towns that had been destroyed, and the it was sad in one way, but it was exciting in others. And the overwhelming feeling I came away with was how much we have in America, and we don't even know it. How lucky we are.
Well, Valerie, I couldn't help but thinking about towns at the bottom of the Tennessee Valley that may have gone away too, and right. some in Massachusetts at various bottoms of various reservoirs, but nothing on this scale. Valerie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Yung Chang, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yung Chang's film, Up the Yangtze, is showing as part of the Silver Docs Festival at the AFI Silver Theater in Silver Spring, Maryland, and that's all this week. Our broadcast today was produced by Barry Hardiman and Dahlia Martinez. Drew Reynolds is our technical director. Help today from Michael Cullen, Nathan Bark, Kurt Stallnaker, and Lauren Driller. We'd also like to thank the entire team here at the museum for their hospitality. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in the night studio at the museum in Washington, D.C.